You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
Packers Talk.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Joining us later will be Colleen. This is the hottest hot take episode of the season so far. Yeah, I think the Hot Mess Express described the team last night. So where do we start?
Can I just talk about Aaron Rodgers long? I mean, do you think that teams have just figured out how to stop him by keeping him in the pocket, knowing that they really don't have like a vertical, like a long passing game? Like, do you think they've just like been able to pare it down and where, well, this is what we really need to defend and this is who we need to take out of the game? James Jones is our biggest threat for a long pass. We can cover pretty much everything else. I mean, are we really, do we need trading for like a long threat? Should we be getting Greg Jennings from Miami? That's my question.
No. Oh, my God, no. I'd rather hack off a limb. Forget it. Yuck. Dive naked into a bucket of razor blades and bleach. I told you it was the hottest hot takes episode of the season. So, Jay, you're like the rational one of all of us. That says a lot because I've seen you at your least rational and your most rational. What are your initial hot takes?
If I'm the most rational person here and the most calm Packers fan of this group, the world's got some major problems. I'm not known for my, shall we say, emotional stability when it comes to football.
So were you all like, screw it, I'm going to bed last night?
No. I tweet for effect because trolling is my internet persona, but deep, you know, my real personality is more of a realistic approach. Last night wasn't good. Let's not put lipstick on a pig. Last night was awful, but there's a couple things to consider. First of all, no professional team is ever going to perform at their top peak performance 16 regular season games a year. It's just not going to happen. No, another thing to consider is the Broncos' defense is just really, really good. Did the Packers lay an egg against the defense? Yes, they did. It was a poor performance, but everyone wants to put all the blame on the Packers and Aaron Rodgers and Tom Clements and Mike McCarthy. They want to blame Packers only, but they don't want to give credit to Denver. Denver's defense is a championship caliber, outstanding defense. Their defense is the cream of the crop right now. They're the best in the NFL. That has a lot to do with it. And another thing to consider is everyone wants to talk about how Mike McCarthy was undefeated the previous 9-8 years coming off bye weeks and how he should have come out firing and had his great new revolutionary game plan for the Broncos. But you have to look at how the teams use the byes. The Packers used the bye mainly to get healthy, and the Broncos used the bye to specifically prepare for the Packers. The Broncos had the new game plan, quick releases, Manning had different route combinations. So different approaches. So it's not surprising the Packers lost. It wasn't pretty. We'll talk about individual categories later, but I'm being rational about it. It wasn't a good showing, but it's just part of the process. No one plays well in Denver. Denver's that good. The Packers needed to get healthy. And so I'm not gonna jump ship yet. I'm not a Seattle Seahawks fan.
No, you're not Macklemore. I think you did point out one thing that I think is very classic of Mike McCarthy is the bye week is essentially a vacation week for the players. They can leave town. They don't have any obligations for that first week. So it wasn't even classroom work. It was, okay, see you in a week, guys. Bye. So I'll ask both of you, Annie and Jay, is that a good concept? Because then you're definitely recharging the batteries mentally and physically. Or are you losing ground as far as game planning?
Well,
so,
I got
I'll go to Annie.
I'm just making loud noises. I got the sense that they probably looked at it and just prioritized the battery recharge, everybody take a vacation, everybody chill out, blah, 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 because it just felt like everybody was maxed out. Like, people were getting hurt, you know, people need to recover, they need to sit in the ice bath, need to do this, that, and the other thing. Other people need their batteries recharged and keep their mental status good to go, whereas the Broncos, I mean, they didn't really have a need for that, so they were able to prioritize the game planning. But we may have come out flat anyway in this game, even if we did do all the game planning in the world, because we didn't allow that, quote, battery recharge. So I don't really know at this point if it would have mattered a whole lot either way, but I do think it was good to try and get everybody healthy, regardless of how much we crashed the bed coming out of the bye.
So, Jay, what's your take on it?
Well, if you look at just last night alone, just one game, then it's easy to say, oh, the Packers blew it. They should have spent the bye week preparing. Look what the Broncos did. But if you look at just kind of the history of the whole bye week process, I think the week off vacation is a really good idea. It recharges batteries. It's also vacation because unlike the rest of the world, typically get a whole weekend off and two weeks of vacation every now and then. Think about the NFL player schedule. They have one day a week off since training camp, and that's Tuesday. And then that Tuesday isn't spent just sitting on a recliner. They're doing community service, outreach. They're doing their advertisement gigs, their radio shows, or TV shows. So it's just another day of work for them. So they're really on the clock 7 days a week, and you're going to burn out. How cranky do we get when we work 5 days straight and have the weekends off? So it's definitely needed. Another thing I always remember is Mike Holmgren talked about one of his bye weeks. And I forget if he was either the head coach of the Packers at the time or he was the offensive coordinator for the 49ers at the time. But this is just when bye weeks were kind of a new thing. And teams didn't really know what to do. Do you let them go for the week on vacation? Do you spend that week game planning? Do you spend that week conditioning? Well, one of his first bye weeks, he had his players condition all week and just run sprints all week and gassers because he thought they're getting out of shape as the season goes by. And they came out after bye week and just got slaughtered because they're all worn out. He worked them too hard during the bye week. So I think there's more advantage than disadvantage from giving the players a week off, step away, recharge, peel, rest, come back ready to go.
And this is totally
random
that you brought up that, you know, they're pretty much on point every single day of the week, even on their off day, they're on. I think growing up in Green Bay, this is why I think I really value the leave them the heck alone if they're not in uniform, because their time off really is few and far between. So I'm a big fan of if you see them up for to dinner, leave them alone. Sandy, you were going to say
question.
Something.
Yeah, I have a question for science people. Do you think that air at Mile High was difficult for the team to get used to and they came out slow because they're not used to it, and by the time they kind of got geared a little bit, they were already down 17 points. I mean, is that a valid reason, is that a valid excuse, or is that not likely to really affect them there?
I think it factors in. If you're not used to the oxygen level a mile high above sea level, it's a kind of a rude awakening. I remember, I forget the player, but he was a Steeler years ago. He was a sickle trait, and he didn't fly with the team because, unlike sickle cell disease where you constantly have disease, when you're sickle trait, you have no symptoms unless you're in, like, high-altitude, low-oxygen situations. They didn't want him to have a stroke. So, yeah, it is harder on the body. Did the Packers go out Friday or Saturday?
Oh, I think they flew out Saturday.
And this isn't an excuse for them, but no one really had even 24 hours to acclimate. I know this is apples to hippopotamus, but I remember going up to 10,000 feet when I was pregnant, and Rob's like, oh, let's go for a hike. And I just about fainted. It definitely is harder on your body. And, you know, we didn't see anybody sucking oxygen on the sidelines, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was happening.
Well, one of the things I've read numerous times from other teams playing in Denver, and they've all said the same thing. It really takes about one full quarter of the game for the players to really kind of adjust to playing in that thin air. And if you look at what happened last night, the Packers essentially got throttled that first quarter while they're still adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
They looked bad. And then they kind of finally settled down for a little bit, and then after that they just flat out quit. I hate to use the word quit, but the team last night, they quit. They quit at about the third quarter. They were done. They just get us out of town. We're done. So I think they started off because of the thin air adjustments, and then it was a mental adjustment. They quit. Because they started to show some life in the second quarter, and then they just gave up.
Do you think they were gassed at all? Because it is a difference. And I'm not a professional athlete. I'm an out of shape middle-aged woman. But even when I was in better shape, I noticed a difference at higher altitude. You don't have the endurance you normally have. The only person I think that benefited from the thin air was Mason Cross. And on the flip side, you look at the Olympic athletes, they train in Colorado because they're at a higher altitude all the time. And it's natural doping, so to speak, because your body will build more red blood cells if you're in higher altitude. So I think from a physiology standpoint, I think if you've been training in Denver all year, you're going to have that physical advantage to a team that, you know, what's Green Bay at, like 300 feet above sea level?
Right, running
low.
Well,
so,
it's not much.
Denver definitely has the advantage. But looking at the game last night, I didn't really notice any Packers truly gassed.
Except
I think
for
it
Nate
does
Palmer,
affect.
He stopped. Just outright stopped.
Well, that's mental. But I think that the thin air will affect the big fatties more. But when I look at a defense that's truly gassed, I look at the defensive backs, the cornerbacks, because they're running those routes all night long, and I didn't see anyone really gasping for air. I didn't see Demaryius Randall or HaHa or Morgan or Micah Hyde, you know, just sucking air. I mean, they seemed fine, but maybe the big fatties up front were having some issues, which is why the pass rush from Denver is crushing Rodgers, and maybe why the Packers couldn't generate a pass rush. But I really honestly think the thin air is greatly blown out of proportion. It is a factor, but it's not. They're professional athletes. Their job is to get in shape. And after about a quarter of playing there, the mental issues are gone, and you just got to get in the game and go. So I think it's great.
So we can all agree they didn't lose because they were just not ready for the altitude, right? Yes.
No,
yeah,
absolutely not.
But it does not help at all. It doesn't help, I guess. But no, there's a lot of reasons they lost, not just that.
So then where should we start? We started talking about Rodgers. What's wrong with Aaron Rodgers? This is a good question to ask. There's a can of worms.
Well, first of all, receivers weren't really getting open. And like Jay said, we're talking championship caliber defense here. And so already it was difficult for the receivers to really get open. We don't have a legitimate deep threat right now that can bust it open and, you know, really get out there. And so I think that was part of it. And also, if you watch, there was a lot of, I think the defense was doing a great job of containing Aaron, keeping him in the pocket. And so between that and the fact that people just could not get open out in the field and for the wide receivers, I think that was really one of the biggest struggles. Plus the fact that I'd see in the first quarter, he stuck in some wind and, you know, and then he got popped pretty good at the beginning there where it looked like he was wincing pretty good. Maybe he was shaken. I don't know. I think it was a combination of things. And then just like Jay mentioned, it was just really probably discouraging to get down that far when you know you're facing such a good defense. And so there's just the team just kind of went, and that probably included Aaron to a point. So I think
that
was a lot.
All right. Before I weigh in on my thoughts on it, Jay, what's your thought on what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers? Is there anything wrong with Aaron Rodgers?
Well, we're all armchair quarterback, and we all have our different hypotheses. You go back to what Aaron Rodgers has always been consistently accused of, and it's one of his biggest strengths, and it's also one of his biggest weaknesses. He tends to hold the ball a little too long because he wants to find that perfect matchup in the open receiver, and that's when the pass rush gets home. And you can't do that against Denver. Denver has a premier pass rush. Their pass rush is better than the Packers by far, and they brought it last night. And the other thing is Aaron Rodgers not only holds on to the ball too much, too long, he's so shy of turnovers, he won't just let it rip. And that's smart because his turnovers are down. He only has a couple interceptions every season.
He's got
two right now. Only has two
so far,
and he had, like, what, seven last year, and a couple of those were off tip balls. So he's not willing to take the chance. And in the NFL, you have to a lot of times throw 50-50 balls, which means you throw the ball up and let your guy go make a play, let your guy attack it. And he would do that in the past when he had trust in his receivers. He would let Jordy go up and make a play. He even would let Jennings go up and make a play sometimes, JerMichael Finley go make a play. But over the last few years, he's done a lot less of that. He's not throwing the 50-50 balls because he does not want to have turnovers. In his mind, it's better to take a sack or punt than it is to throw an interception, which is partially true, but it's also a weakness. And for some reason this year he doesn't trust his receivers to go make a play because he's got the walking dead out there. I mean, Jordy's not on the field. Davante Adams is a bum ankle. Montgomery's not out there. James Jones he's hurt, and he's also his third team in a year, so there's still a little bit of learning and adjustment going on. So he's not really trusting his players to go up and make those 50-50 balls. He doesn't throw the 50-50. Just watch any game in the NFL on Sunday and Monday night. Watch the game tonight. You're going to see Cam, you're going to see Luck throw up 50-50 balls because they have big, giant receivers that go get them. Well, the Packers don't have big, giant receivers to go get them, so Aaron Rodgers doesn't throw it. So those are the two biggest things. He pulled the ball a little too long, trying to make a play. He gets sacked, and then he will not take any risks. That's a good thing and a bad thing at the same time.
So do you think he overthinks it, which could also be a weakness because he is a very cerebral quarterback?
Well, I think last night he was definitely overthinking it and got gun-shy because there are a couple of plays where so Twitter amuses me. I like to troll on Twitter. I like to complain on Twitter. I get it. But Twitter during a Packers loss is – I would hate to see Twitter during that Orson Welles, you know, War of the Worlds radio
podcast. Oh, my God. People would be splitting their ribs.
I mean, it's just awful. Like, so they're like, well, they didn't throw any crossing patterns last night. Yeah, they did. And Davante Adams was open on a couple crossing patterns, but the window closed a little quickly, so Rodgers didn't want to squeeze it in there. So he is – right now Rodgers is playing in his own head a little bit much. A little gun-shy, and getting knocked on your keister and getting socked around a little bit will do that, especially – if you know you're down and you can't afford a turnover because you're playing, you're not willing to use those windows as much crossing routes going away. So.
All right, let me follow that up. I noticed you did not mention Jeff Janis. And I know some people think of him as the second coming, the touchdown messiah that never hits anything right. Is it just me, or would Aaron Rodgers rather hack off a limb than throw a 50-50 to Jeff Janis? Jay.
I didn't hear you because you were breaking up.
Sorry.
My connection.
It might be my connection, too. So let me repeat the question. The receiver you did not mention was Jeff Janis. And, you know, you look at the Twitter sphere, and you would think he's the second coming of Christ, the touchdown messiah that never manages to make it in the end zone. Correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, you talk about trust. You didn't mention Janis. I don't think Aaron trusts Janis. He kind of runs sloppy routes. Is it just me, or would Rodgers rather hack off a limb than throw a 50-50 to Jeff Janis?
Well, yeah, that's just it. Well, there's a couple of things to consider. Not only is the Twitter box just, you know, ready to jump off a bridge unless Jeff Janis runs a fly pattern and saves the day. I'm gonna say the deep threat is not the problem. They could send Adams on the pattern. They could send Aberderis. They could send Janis. They could send Cobb. Cobb's pretty quick. The deep route is not going to save the day. It's not going to stretch the defense. The deep route doesn't open things up. That's a big misconception. It does not work like that. All that's going to happen is you're going to put an extra safety back there, but if you can't run the ball, it doesn't do it. So a deep threat's not going to save the day. But that's not the problem. But then on top of that, Janis is not a good deep threat receiver. Everyone is so enamored with his speed. Oh, he ran a 4.4. He's white lightning second coming.
It reminds me a little of that line from I know it's baseball, but from Major League. It's like, you may run like Hayes, but you bat like, you know.
Yep, exactly. So he's fast, but he's not a good deep receiver. It requires a lot of nuances and body control and hand-eye coordination. He doesn't have that. I put up an article on Cheesehead TV a couple weeks ago about Janis, just showing how he's not a good deep threat. He needs to learn that. And plus, he's also a body catcher.
that's the thing coming out of college. The big ding on his scuttering performance. He's a body catcher. And if you're running the deep threat and you want to run in stride, you don't body catch. You can't do it. So and also that his routes are sloppy. Is he talented? Yes. Is he going to get there someday? Yes. But right now, he's not the answer. Someday, he might be. It took Donald Driver 3 years to make it. So, and he was also a seventh-round draft pick out of a small school, just like Janis. But Janis came out of even smaller school, Division II school, and similar skill set, fast. He'll get there, just not now. He's not the answer now.
Let me weigh in on this whole what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers. I think you hit on the head game that he plays with himself. But I think what's not wrong about Aaron Rodgers is he's so consistent that defenses have figured him out. They know that he doesn't have Jordy Nelson as his deep threat. So what are they going to do? They're going to, you know, definitely dogpile on James Jones and Randall Cobb. Devontae Adams is just coming back off the injury, so they aren't back in sync. And everybody knows he doesn't trust Janis. So you cover their two main deep, you know, their main receivers, Cobb and Jones, and suddenly his windows get really small, and he's not going to go for option four. That's my take on it. I think they figured him out because he is kind of predictable on who he's going to choose because he's so picky with who he drafts. So, any other thoughts on that before we move on?
Well, I was just going to say it's not so much that Rodgers is predictable and defenses have figured him out. I think it's the fact that Rodgers has been so good for so long, the Packers have gotten kind of complacent with his ability, that he's been so good at making something happen out of nothing. And throwing his receivers open, and so they've not really had to modify their game plan or their scheme all that much. They keep trying to throw the same thing out there just because they know it's going to work because Rodgers has been so good. And I think last night they got exposed. Peyton Manning came out with a totally different game plan last night because they had to game plan for the Packers defense. But it seems like the Packers are so just comfortable and consistent and just so used to Rodgers doing so well. They run their base packages and don't really game plan for the defense. They game plan for themselves. Like, who do we have that's healthy that can run our offense? So I think moving forward, I think last night was a wake-up call that they can't just game plan for themselves, insert players who are healthy to run our scheme. They're going to have to modify some of their scheme moving forward to create those matchups with the players they have. And so Rodgers can't win on his own. He needs his receivers to do it for him as well.
Gotcha. Annie, are you still here? Did you have to duck out?
I'm here.
She's not. Okay, you're here. All right, so I'm going to throw this question out to both of you. It's a follow-up. Did either one of you see or hear parts of Aaron Rodgers' press conference last night? All right, crickets?
No.
Okay, well, I watched it today after reading something online. He was actually more calm than I thought he'd be. He wasn't one of those crabby, scowling press conferences that he's had before. He was definitely calling for things need to change. Are we sensing the emergence of a junta party within the Packers organization? You know, viva la Aaron, viva la Revolucion, or, you know, are we going to see things either he's directing or Clemens is going to have to change? I know you talked about we game plan for ourselves, but now we have to game plan against other teams, and I think that's going to be crucial with Carolina. Do you think Aaron is fed up with the complacent offense? Because it sounded kind of like one. Annie, what's your thoughts?
Well, I did hear a little bit of the press conference, and the biggest one I heard was when they're like, this is the stupidest question ever, when they're like, so, do you think Peyton still got it? And he's like, yeah. I mean, what kind of question is that? Seriously. I wish I could have just said it out loud, because I'm pretty sure that's pretty long to say. Anyway, in terms of things have to change, I think he's probably talking to himself as much as anybody else, and maybe for the very reasons that Jay cited, where he's talking about how he's not willing to take any risks right now because, A, you're dealing with the kind of defense that the Broncos have, that's biggie, but also just that, you know, the Packers have to be able to get out of their comfort zone right now and change up their game plan a little bit in order to function because of how they have to play without their deep threat right now, in terms of the offense anyway. So I don't know, but I also think that maybe when he says things have got to change, you know, I think that he's talking to himself as much as anybody else because he thinks that he understands that he might have to go a little far sometimes. I mean, look at the Vikings yesterday. If you watch any part of the Vikings game, the only reason the Vikings pulled that game off was because Teddy Bridgewater took some big risks in the fourth quarter, including throwing essentially a jump ball to Charles Johnson, who lost his starting job for a couple of games, but he was there, he is tall, he's available, and Teddy said, well, forget it. Either I am going to complete this ball and we're going to have a big first down, and we're going to keep on moving, or we're screwed. And so he took a chance on a receiver that he definitely does not trust right now, and they came out ahead. Now, am I saying that Rodgers should start tossing jump balls everywhere? No. But I am saying that sometimes you do need to take a bit of a risk and give your wide receivers a reason to show you why you can trust them. And so I think that, all in all, I think he's referring partially to the game plan, to the head coach, offensive coach, or to the play caller, but also to even himself, to say, okay, I got to change it up a little bit because clearly they maybe have figured me out a little bit and I need to be able to adjust accordingly. So
Jay, you didn't see the presser, but you got the gist of it. What's your take-home message from it?
Well, I think everyone in 1265 Lombardi knows things need to be changed. And to kind of get to the answer, I'm going to go on a mini rant, maybe not so mini, an extended rant.
Get a drink. Get yourself comfortable. This is going to take a while.
Yep. So pour your drink. Get the popcorn. This rant is geared for the Sky is Falling Packers Twitter. Oh, my God. You're annoying. And
we're
also
looking for luck. Oh, my God.
And also the Sky is Falling Packers Twitter. You are just wrong on so many things, and it burns how wrong you are on things. Yes, I understand it sucks to see your team lose. It hurts. We want to see them win. We tweet a lot of negative stuff. But 24 hours later, the same Sky is Falling people are saying we need wholesale changes in the Packers offense. You know, we're a West Coast offense. Where's our slant routes? Where's our curl routes? Newsflash, the Packers aren't West Coast. They haven't been West Coast since Aaron Rodgers has been starters. The Packers
just, you know,
are Air Coryell.
Rob asked that last night. He's like, well, how come they're not running the West Coast? I'm like, because that was 20 years ago, Rob.
Yeah, the Packers have not been West Coast since at least 2008. They're Air Coryell. They're vertical. They're a vertical team. And everyone's like, well, put those throws back in. Well, it's a couple things that it's a fine balance. You can't just expect your receiver to suddenly, even practicing all week, suddenly, oh, at halftime we're going to put a whole new route tree in. Doesn't work like that. Yes, they're professionals. They should be able to run all the routes. But if you've been practicing all week on a specific game plan, you can't just say, at halftime, we're going all slants and curls, when all week you've been running sevens and nine routes. You were corners and streaks and all those things. The Packers are a vertical team. They're not West Coast. So the Twitter Sky's Falling people, they're not West Coast. Get over it. They're not. And they won't be as long as Rodgers is at the helm. Now, following that up, you also, I want to say that, well, everyone also on Packers Twitter, Sky's Falling Packers Twitter, is like, they had, in a bye week, they didn't game plan at all. No, they did game plan. They had a very, very aggressive game plan. It was aggressive. Denver's defense is outstanding, and the Packers decided, well, we're not going to dink and dunk the Broncos. We're going to attack the Broncos. It didn't work. They got slaughtered, but at least they had an aggressive plan. We're going to spread them out, and we're going to run them deep. We're going to attack them. Guess what? That's the same game plan they did in Super Bowl 45 against the Steelers. Spread them out, chuck downfield. It worked. They won. It was an aggressive game plan. And also, you have to consider another thing. I'm actually standing now and walking around my apartment waving my hands now. I'm in full lecture mode because I'm fired up now. So another thing you have to consider is you can't just turn West Coast in the offense in halftime or midseason, because guess what? As a coach, you've been with these players since March and April, OTAs and then training camp in July. You've been trying to get these players to buy into you for 4 months. Suddenly you say, oh, guess what? I was wrong for 4 months for switching our offense. You just lost that locker room. They don't trust you at all. Whatever you were selling them for 4 months is gone. You lost them. They're not going to buy it anymore. So you have to stick with what you've been selling all season. You can make subtle changes. You can add little nuances here and there. And that's what the Packers are going to do. So Packers Twitter, they're not switching to West Coast by next week. They're going to add some matchups. They're going to add some different nuances, but it's still going to be an Air Coryell offense. And eventually they'll get it right. It'll work, and the Packers will be good again. So just step off the ledge, put down the Drano, put down the pine saw. It's going to be okay. They'll get it right. There's a lot of good coaches in that building. They're going to get it right.
So when do you add in
okay.
The ooh, piece of candy lecture? Ooh, piece of candy.
So that's my rant. And if I lose some followers on Twitter tonight, if I lose my three followers, that's fine. But, oh, my God. Sky's fall on Twitter is so annoying. It's
oh my god,
so,
this morning
so misinformed.
Jay, this morning I swear to God, it's like we were sucking for luck and all that's left is playing for a draft pick. You know what? Didn't we just get our butts handed to us on a platter against New Orleans last year and things turned out okay?
Yes. Yes.
We got, like, our butts handed to us on a platter. Aaron Rodgers didn't throw for, like, 35 yards or whatever he threw for last night, but it wasn't that great either. He went out and he was hurt.
Yes, yes. So last night the Packers had an aggressive game plan. It just didn't work because Denver is a championship defense. And the Packers have a beat-up receiving core, and the O-line has taken a step back this week. So it didn't work. But it wasn't because they're stupid or lazy, didn't care. It's because Denver's good and the Packers are beat up. So the Packers are back to the drawing board this week. You heard Edgar Bennett and his presser tonight. They're going to self-scout. Everyone, sky's falling, Twitter. It's like, didn't you self-scout last week? Yeah, they did. They put a game plan in. It didn't work. So they're going to put a new game plan in for Carolina. And maybe this time it'll work and everyone will shut up.
It's a lot like a hot take from Mom. It's like, oh, did you know you put on a little weight since I saw you last? Like, no, Mom, I was 108 pounds when I went to bed. What the hell happened? And sometimes the obnoxious hot takes are just like, okay, thank you, Captain Obvious. We know we have to work on it. No, I think we'll sit here and watch film and eat bonbons all week. You know they're going back to work.
And here's another thing. Why didn't the Packers throw slants last night? I don't know, because maybe Denver has some of the best linebackers in the NFL. You don't throw your wide receivers into a linebacker and get them killed. They're already dead as it is. You're asking to be clotheslined. Yes, I'm sad the Packers lost. I'm angry the Packers lost, but I'll get over it. And it's not because the Packers are stupid, lazy, or whatever. It just didn't work. They tried. They tried.
And while you're at it, get off Jay's effing lawn, okay?
Yes, and turn down your subwoofer.
Hey, did your idiot neighbor move yet with his stupid subwoofer or not?
Oh, yeah, the idiot neighbor's gone. It's so lovely.
All right, John Rahor, you used to have the reputation of the best rant in the Packers Talk Network. I think you've been replaced. Jay in his Get Off My Lawn section. I think we need to make this a section, Get Off My Lawn. Jay's going to rant now. But wasn't that
satisfying? If the Packers win and the sky's falling Twitter people go back to their mom's basement, then we won't have to have a Get Off My Lawn rant.
Okay, so, Andy, you agree we need a Get Off My Lawn rant section each week? All right, Andy's not there.
Andy's here.
Oh, you're here. All right, I didn't know if you had to leave or not. So do you have anything you want to add to the rant, or you just need a cigarette to bask in the glow of the rant?
No, I tend to agree with Jay. I think that everybody needs to not panic. I think everybody needs to not panic. Jay already said everything so eloquently. So I'm golden, and I am going to go. But I will bring Colleen in as soon as she is here. So I'm just going to tell her to speak up and let you guys know she's here. So
will do. So, Jay, you used to be...
not so grumpy at the world? Yeah.
yeah, that too. God, what were you, like 9 at the time? Okay, now it's a Kelly and Jay show. It's like, listen to siblings argue for the last half hour of the show. Okay,
you know, maybe we'll have a spinoff show.
Yeah, exactly. What we call it, Hot Takes with Jay and Kelly. The offensive line, you're still stuck on the offense. Let's talk a little bit longer about that. Was the pass rush just that good, or was our offensive line not good last night?
Yes. The answer
correct.
Is yes.
We have vanilla, chocolate, and strawberry.
Yes, and the Pope is still Catholic. It's
okay.
Both.
All right.
Both. Denver has a premier pass rush. It's just premier. There's no other way around it. It's premier. And they're going to cause fits for any offensive line, including they give problems to, you know, the Dallas line of the 90s because they're that good. But then also I was thinking about and just watching games this year compared to last year, the offensive line has taken a step back. It has. And several reasons. Sitton and Lang are getting older. They're another year older. Bulaga is coming off a pretty major injury, so he's got to play himself back into shape. Bakhtiari had an injury this preseason. He's playing himself back into shape. And Lindsley's having a little bit of sophomore slump. So last year, the offensive line was great. And I thought the weakest link on the offensive line last year was still Bakhtiari. He was still good, but he was, I think, Pro Football Focus's 53rd best overall tackle. So that's telling you something. But we all know how I love PFF's grades, F-minus-minus for Aaron Rodgers.
Isn't that great? So, okay, speaking of that, I'm just going to interrupt you for a second. How ironic is this? Like, Aaron Rodgers threw for, like, 4 yards last night. He still had a higher rating on Pro Football Focus than he did against that game where he threw for 5 touchdowns against Kansas City. Riddle me that, Batman.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, it's because he was facing north and touched his nose while he threw the ball. It's harder. It's harder. It's harder.
And Pluto was in line with Jupiter or something.
Exactly. So, offensive lines, they get old. They're getting older. Sitton and Lang are a year older. That's going to make a difference. And Sitton gave up his first sack this season in, like, the last several years. So he's starting to show a little bit of his age. And there's this natural decline. And also, Lang's been playing hurt all year, too. He had a concussion, and I think he's some other injuries that are not overly disclosed. I'm not saying they're violating injury reports like the Colts clearly do.
Well, he had an ankle injury a few games back.
Yeah, so, I mean...
Or no, knee.
They're
knee,
all,
yeah, never mind, it was an MCL. Or, yeah. No, it was ankle or knee,
yeah,
or something like that.
They're all playing banged up, but they are taking a step back. So couple that, the step back, with a premier pass rush, you're going to get decked as a quarterback. It's just a fact of life. You're going to get decked. So that's what happened last night.
Okay, so I'm pretty critical of the line because I do tend to watch the line a lot. Just so you know, I was, like, making a comment about Corey Linsley. I'm like, not only did he hike it to Rodgers' ankles, he then just gave up the sack that got him killed. And that tweet gets favorited by a Lindley. I'm like, oh, God, either his brother or his dad's now watching me say bad things about him. However, I think he's been the most consistent sophomore slump notwithstanding. Sure, he had two high, you know, he hiked the ball twice to Rodgers' ankles yesterday. But for the most part, he gets the job done. And I was impressed by how incredibly nimble he was on one of the running plays. He hikes the ball, and then he runs to the outside of Sitton and blocks the hole there for Lacy. Did you see that play where, wow, our center can move pretty fast?
No, I didn't see that play specifically, but Lindsley's very athletic. He can move. In fact, because he can move so well, last year they put in a lot of special fold blocks, which is, it looks like a pull, but it's not. It's kind of a cross block. They put those
well,
in last year where...
This play, he almost looked like he was the pulling guard for that play. It's like he went to the outside of Sitton. It was like, wow, that was really kind of cool.
Yeah, so they put different leads in and different fold blocks, different cross blocks, because he's that athletic. So, I mean, the line's not playing as what they did last year, but they're by no means a disaster. Seattle's got a disaster of a line. Detroit's got a disaster of a line. Carolina
that said,
has a disaster of a line.
So hopefully we can exploit that next, and hopefully, for purely selfish reasons, can help me watch the Lions' disaster of a line in the last game of the season.
Yeah, hopefully that'd be great. That's January 3rd. That's bourbon tailgate for our faithful listeners out there. So maybe we'll see if we make it happen. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that is right. It is bourbon tailgate. So yeah, the line I'm not as worried about because we are getting back. You know, the band's back together. We don't have to rely on the second strings. And the moments like this when the line falters are one of the few times I'm happy we still have John Koo because he becomes like lineman 5.5. All right.
Oh,
so before
I like Koon. Koon. I like Koon. Last year, Koon had his best year as a fullback, not only because he had a run over 3 yards, but because he's a good blocker. He really had some great blocks last year, so he deserved every accolade he got. He deserved the contract he got this year. He had his best year last year as a blocker.
And sorry, Title Town Sound Elf guys, I just do not get the Rapelski love. I just don't. Sorry.
Oh, no. So, Chris,
I know
you're
listening.
Mail.
Suck my big toe.
So the hate mail goes to Kelly. She lives in Wisconsin. I'll DM you the email and her postal mail. You can send all the hate mail you want, including flaming bags of poo.
Which, by the way, was a question on Twitter yesterday. It's like, what goes into a flaming bag of poo? And Colleen's like, poo and fire? We're like, no, idiot, you forgot the bag. There's a bag involved in the flaming bag of poo.
Yes, yes. Yep.
Otherwise, it's
played good.
All right, so before we jump over to the defense, is Fat Eddie fat? Is that the problem, or is this just Twitter going bananas with Portly Edwards?
It doesn't.
Give me
help.
Your take. Give me your take based on, since you follow him pretty closely in college.
Yeah. So everyone knows I'm a huge Alabama fan. And I was a huge Fat Eddie fan before he was even Fat Eddie. He was once upon a time just Eddie. And I loved him in college. And one of the things about Alabama is Nick Saban has something called the fourth quarter conditioning program. His players are never out of shape. They will never get out conditioned. They'll never get outworked in the fourth quarter. And if you look at pictures of Eddie, especially in the 2012 national championship game against Notre Dame, where Alabama absolutely dump trucked Notre Dame, Brent Musburger called it, "Oh my, what a roadkill!" One of the best days of my life.
Though it was totally awesome.
And I think what the cover of SI for that game was Eddie Lacy totally steamrolling over Manti Te'o. But the bottom line is Eddie Lacy was at least 30 pounds lighter back then. He was faster. His spin move was more effective. He was more elusive, but he still had power. He still would lower shoulder and just bulldoze and totally dump truck someone. Well, when Eddie became a pro, he got a little heavier, and that's expected because they don't have the same college conditioning programs right now. Pros are not as well conditioned as college players. You'll never convince me otherwise they are. They're not, because the CBA says they don't have to condition as much. True fact. They don't practice as much. They don't have two-a-days. So they're not as conditioned. So Eddie got a little heavier, and some players, it's okay. But I think Eddie, the weight will help him maintain his health as far as he's not going to get as beat up anymore. But he's noticeably not as elusive anymore. And his spin move is no longer as effective. So he's heavy. He's probably, I think Bob McGinn tweeted something about a week ago. It said, scouts and player personnel people say that Eddie Lacy is playing above 260 now. And I believe it, because in college he was listed at 230, and he looked a real 230. And this year the players program says he's 235, 234. Eddie Lacy is not 234. He's about 260. So that will
help. Don't they always list like their college weights in those programs and media guys?
Yeah.
And stuff.
Well,
usually you're a college weight.
Yeah, well, I'm down to my college weight. I'm buck 85 now. So.
You are? Wow.
So, no, I was just joking. You're crazy.
I'm like, wow, that's impressive.
No. So Eddie is not 234. He's not, and it's affected his play. Now, does it affect his play where he's no longer the best option on the field? No, he's still the best option because he's still good. But he could be better if he was lighter. He would be more shifty. He would be able to hit the hole quicker, and he'd be able to spin move more effectively. So, and you could tell in Mike McCarthy's voice during the presser like a week ago, is Eddie fat? Well, he's a little heavier than normal, and we're aware of things. That's coach speak where I'm not happy.
You need to drop 15 quickly.
Yeah, he was supposed to come into training camp this year lighter. He said he set a goal to be lighter, which means the coaches put something in his contract saying you need to be lighter. But he came in training camp, I think, heavier than last year. And I don't think coaches were very happy with him. And as the season goes by, players get heavier because they're not conditioning as much as they used to. They're not in training camp anymore. They're not eating the special training camp catered food anymore. They're on their own now. So they tend to get heavier as the year goes by, conditioning wears off. So Eddie needs to at least not gain any more this year and come back next year lighter. And look at Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell and Eddie were the same draft class. They're both bigger, heavier backs. Le'Veon dropped weight. Eddie got bigger. And Le'Veon was better
when he was lighter.
He's out for
the season now.
Well, he's out for the season, but he was better when he got lighter. He was more shifty. Before Le'Veon got hurt, he was the best back in the NFL. And losing weight, I think, helped. It helped. He's more shifty, more
elusive.
So this
reminds me of my first year of working Packer training camp was when Brett Fullwood was fullback, and he came in like 30 pounds overweight. And they put him on a diet. And I remember, did you ever work with Kathy Kaminsky?
Yeah, we had the special plates. Yeah,
we had he had like a special diet. He had to be on like, this is what Brent Fullwood gets to eat. And you know what it's like being 16 years old and him whining to say, can I have more ice cream? And I'm like, and we're all like, no, your coach won't let you have anymore. We had to measure it out for him. How humiliating is that as a guy who's making a lot more than the minimum wage kid on the other side of the ice cream bar?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, I don't know, will it ever come to that of, hi, Eddie, you're now, this is our intervention. Now you're going to be put on a low-calorie diet, and we're going to make you, on a heavyweight, you're the fattest kid in camp.
Well, another thing to consider, though, is you don't want players losing weight in season because they're taking energy away from themselves. They're not going to be as energized. So you need to lose weight in the off season or lose weight during the bye week.
Yeah, I agree with that. But you know who you're reminding me of right now? Yeah, you don't calorie restrict in this season. I agree with that. But you know who he reminds me of right now, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, is Jerome Bettis.
No, I was going to disagree with you. I was going to disagree with you 1,000%. 1,000%.
Okay, who does he remind you of right now? Because the guy is built like a tank right now.
Well, everyone's like, well, some backs are big. Look at Jerome Bettis. He got big when he was in pro. He's much
but
bigger
he
when
was,
he...
I think he was always big, though, wasn't he?
He was big, but he was a lot bigger with the Steelers than he was with the Rams, and a lot bigger than he was with Notre Dame. Fat Eddie, I love Fat Eddie. Don't get me wrong. I love him. Roll Tide. I love him. I want him to retire Packer. I want him to win a rushing title. I love him. I love, 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 love Fat Eddie. He's one of my man crushes. Sorry, Chris. But he's
oh, God.
Not,
now, okay, awkward. Hello.
That was meant to see people were listening, because right now
oh,
we have probably
God,
two
I
listeners.
Oh, my God, my brother and his man crushes, he just listened. I think I'm going to go bleep my brain. Really?
Okay, but it was just meant as a joke. Okay, but anyway. So,
oh, God, still bleaching my brain.
Eddie Lacy is not Jerome Bettis. He will never be Jerome Bettis. And I don't think anyone wants him to be Jerome Bettis. Jerome Bettis was a big man, but he was
love
nimble.
Love the bus. Love the bus.
He had very good feet. He was very light-footed. He was actually elusive for a big man and actually was faster than you'd think. Eddie is a bulldozer. Jerome Bettis, really, they call him the bus. And, yes, he would bulldoze people. But he wasn't really the classic bulldozer you think he is.
No, he bounced and he spun.
Yeah.
And he
Jerome
did
Bettis
it well. He was like a pinball.
He was an amazing back. He was very athletic for a big man. He used his mass when he had to, but he also used his nimbleness to miss the hit and find the hole and squeeze the little crevices and bounce around. He was amazing. Well, Fat Eddie isn't that nimble. He's truly a dump truck.
Which is, I wish he would stop going east-west and just barrel through north-south, yep. Because when he goes to the outside, he loses.
Yes, and Jerome Bettis got better when he was big. Eddie has not gotten better when he's big. Eddie needs to drop about 30, I think. Or at least 20.
Okay.
He's got to drop 20.
So, long story short, is Portly Edward needs to be less portly?
Yes. But right. It'll have to be in the off season. You don't calorie restrict during the season. You don't lose weight during the season.
And one thing I'm looking forward to is the second half of the season with him, you know, whether he's Portly Edward or not, is he tends to be a good cold weather player, which really surprises me for a Southerner. You know, he's a kid from Louisiana. He played at Bama. And, you know, you get sloppy winter games, and actually he kind of comes out of the woodwork.
You know, he's not going to overheat like other fat kids. You know,
all right.
Cold.
So we've been avoiding talking about defense, I guess. We should talk about defense. And as I'm looking at the outline that I cannot read out loud because I was mad when I wrote it, it's like, what the chiz is wrong with the defense? Okay, I'm going to start with a question. Should we trade Casey Hayward for $50 and a case of beer? Yes or no?
No. Casey Hayward's good. Okay. They misused him. Casey Hayward is a slot corner. They're trying to force the square pegs of the round hole and play him on the outside. He's not good on the outside. He's a slot guy. He got destroyed on the outside with Demaryius Thomas. But
and
guess
you
what?
Know they game planned against him. It's like, okay, we're going to go up against this kid because he's going to get torched every time.
Yeah. And Demaryius Thomas torches everyone. So Casey Hayward was not the only cornerback to get toasted. So he needs to be in the slot, and the Rook needs to be on the outside. And hopefully Sticky comes back healthy next week. Apparently it's
well,
not
last
serious
I heard, yeah, I don't think it's probably, if they're saying it's day-to-day now, it's probably a mild separation. I was worried last night when they did the shot of him on the sideline, and he's like wincing and kind of burying his head into the doc's shoulder. I'm like, oh, he broke his collarbone, we're screwed. But thankfully it doesn't seem like that was the case. Have we heard anything about Quentin Rollins and his shoulder injury?
I have not heard anything about that, so maybe that's a little more serious. And they don't have to disclose anything until Wednesday, I believe, so maybe it's a wait and see. Who knows?
All right.
But
hopefully
what's wrong?
We can get it. What?
Well, I was going to say, what's wrong with the defense? I'll tell you. Do you want another hot take on the defense?
Oh, my God. Everyone get comfortable. Get your smokes, your drinks, your snacks, whatever it takes. Get comfortable. This is going to take a while.
So, who do the Packers have at middle linebacker? So, I'm going to give you my rant by asking you questions. So, who are the Packers?
Sometimes we have
linebacker?
Clay Matthews. And
okay, who? Okay, let me stop you there. Who other than Clay Matthews can cover a receiver?
Crickets.
Clay
no
Matthews.
No one.
It,
no one.
Clay. Yeah.
Clay Matthews is the only linebacker on the roster who can cover a receiver. Julius Peppers, no. Mike Neal,
he's slow
no.
And no.
Nick
no,
Perry,
no. Don't say,
no.
Anything, don't say anything bad about Mike Neal because he'll block. Even when you're trying to be nice to him, he blocks.
Well, that's cute. You think he listens to us.
I don't care. He blocked me because I said don't listen to the comments. So suck my big toe,
so, Mike. So the only linebacker on the entire roster who can cover anyone is Clay Matthews. And Clay Matthews has been playing inside and outside. So this is what you do. You either have Clay rush the passer or you have Clay go in coverage. And the Broncos decided that they're going to game plan all those crossing routes last night. Peyton Manning destroyed the Packers on crossing routes last night. Because what do you need for defend crossing routes? Good linebacker.
A real linebacker.
So
what do we have, Nate
what?
Palmer?
Yeah, Clay Matthews can't cover three receivers over the middle in crossing routes, especially if he's going to rush the passer. So people want to say Denver's game plan was to torch Casey Hayward. Yeah, that was part
of it. They did. Yep. That was part of it.
Yeah, that was part of it. The other part of it was we're going to run crossing routes all day until they can stop us, and they couldn't because Clay Matthews can't cover three receivers, especially after he has a bum ankle. He couldn't cover anyone at that point. So it was the game plan was masterful. You gave Peyton Manning and Gary Kubiak a week off to prepare for the Packers. They picked them apart. Just picked them apart. And the pass rush wasn't getting home. So you have no pass rush. You can't cover anyone. It's over. It's game over. It's go home. You know, face the Panthers.
All right. Sorry, I didn't mean to cough into the microphone. You saw the one play where it was a pass that Nate Palmer had his back to, and he just stopped and quit. Oh, my God. If anyone deserved to be slapped last night, it was him. It's like, oh, thanks for stopping 3 seconds before the play was over. Would you like a chair to get comfy?
Yeah, well, he got benched after that. Coaches don't bench for blown assignments. Coaches don't bench for turnovers. They do sometimes.
He
but
quit.
Coaches,
he gave up.
Yeah, coaches bench when you give up.
And
like,
that's
a couple
that,
years ago. What's that?
Go on. Sorry.
I was going to say, coaches bench when you quit. I think it was his rookie season, Micah Hyde quit on a play. Guess what? He didn't see the field the rest of the game. So coaches will not bench for blown coverage. If you're hustling and screw up, fine, screw up big. You live to play another down. That's great. But the minute you quit and watch the play unfold, you're off the field, maybe indefinitely.
Oh, my God. It was just frustrating. Can everyone just shut the hell up about Clay Matthews supposedly checking out of the NFC Championship game? Last night, he hurt his ankle, got spatted up, and went back in garbage time. He didn't need to go back in. There was no reason for him to go back in other than he's kind of the heart of the offense defense right now. But he did it anyway. He was going to lead by example last night in garbage time.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello, who's there?
Drunk Kyle here.
Oh, drunk caller? You better not be drunk. You just got out of the car.
I got out of an undisclosed location, much like Dick Cheney. That's where I got out of.
So we've got about three minutes left.
Tell her I am here.
Rant, you got about 3 minutes left, so rant away.
So, get out of the way, dog. I would like to talk a little bit about a couple things, very briefly. One of them is what happened to Michael Cohen and the reaction that has come from fans to that. I am really, really tired of the fact that people seem to think that if Rob Davis did what he did, it was no big deal. That if Michael Cohen felt bullied, that he wasn't. Packer fans, you should be better than that. If somebody who is much larger than you gets in your personal space and invades your private space and acts really nasty to you, you're being bullied. Deal with it. And if the Packers are tolerating any of their staff or players not talking to a reporter, intimidating a reporter physically in any way, I am ashamed of you as an organization. Unacceptable. This is not how
you know,
we roll.
I had a feeling Michael Cohen was going to get attacked for it. You guys remember I wrote that article about the drunk guy that cornered me last year at the game? I got just flayed alive by comments. It's like, oh, you're a whore who had it coming. I'm like, dude, I was in a winter coat. Oh, you were too sensitive. Oh, he was just hitting on you. You know, I knew that this was exactly what was going to happen to Michael Cohen, and I think that's exactly why it had to be Bob McGinn that wrote that article, because he would have gotten just attacked if he wrote it himself. And even then,
the Packers are entirely famous for intimidating reporters. They've done it before. Not physically, mind you.
but you lose access if you don't play nice with them.
Damn right you do. I know somebody that got yelled at for writing that Ramble Cop coming out of the backfield when everybody at practice in training camp, including me, because I was there, saw it. They threatened to yank this guy's access. That's crap. I understand the cold shoulder. I understand the unwritten rule, blah, blah, blah. But physically intimidating somebody? No, not acceptable.
So what's the deal? It's like, yeah, this is all fine to control the message, but now in the days of Google, like, especially when it comes to LaTroie Guyon, I was writing an article when I was kind of making fun of everyone who got arrested this past summer. In about two steps on Google, I found out all about his past, you know, criminal activity, you know, the domestic dispute, you know, hitting his ex-girlfriend's boyfriend. It's just there by Googling it. You know, unless the NFL can control Google, it's all out there for public consumption.
And if Mike McCarthy didn't know anything about this, then Ted Thompson is not doing his job. Period. Like Jay
come
said,
on,
they know what kind of hemorrhoid cream they use. Give me a break.
I know. Well, you know, like a lot of jobs, you get background checked on a regular basis. Like, come on, do your homework.
Yep,
don't get embarrassed and pissy if you get caught with your pants down because someone in their organization, whether it was an intern or somebody at a desk, didn't do their job and didn't find out all the uglies of somebody they were going to sign. It's all out there on Google.
My bigger problem, they can decide, because I worked in human resources for years, we decided to hire people with a myriad of background problems, things that came through on a check. Don't have a problem with that. You interview the person, you have other ways of finding out what kind of a person this really is and what these problems were caused by or how they've dealt with them. My problem is the Packers' response to it. That's just not cool.
Jay, do you have any take on this?
And we like him anyway. Here's why. Okay, I can go with that.
And also, it's not like dirty laundry isn't out there. Jay went to college in Green Bay, you know, during the 90s. I'm sure he could write a book on what he saw. Am I right, Jay?
Oh, yes. The things I saw in public as a consumer, just on the town, and Packers doing weird things. And also, I don't want to, I guess, break any sort of code like Jerry Kramer. Apparently, he broke a long time ago, and he's still paying for it today. Let's just say a lot of stuff happened in training camp, and I'll just leave it at that. Just stuff happened. Stuff happened.
And the thing is, before the internet, you could really control image, but now it's out there for public consumption. So don't be attacking the messenger because he did his homework.
Right.
Michael Cohen, you know, it wasn't a garbage article. It was very objective. It was not subjective. It just laid out what LaTroie Guyon's criminal record is. That's the whole
thing. It was factual. Factual is not garbage. Lying is garbage. Factual is not garbage.
Because he linked to the court cases. You know, they're there in all their boring, legally glory for you to read if you want.
Yep. Sorry. Like I said, I'm not cool with Packers. Not happy.
But fans' responses to it about the, this posse bullying because it's the Green Bay Packers. Oh, come on. Really?
There were certain bloggers who profess to be professional journalists at this point in their life. And as someone who actually writes for a living, so to me, you can't really be a journalist if you're too much of a fan. And I'm not going to say who it is, but I bet you guys can guess. You know what? You can't be a true fan of a team, if you will, and be a good journalist about that team. But you should also step back and respect the fact that some people can do that job and not attack them for it.
So we could all make fun of somebody like Jason Wilde for liking Oregon. Really, Jason, you're a Wisconsin, you know, grad. But I can respect the fact that a journalist is very objective. And
well,
I think
he's
not a
Packers fan, and he can't be. I understand that. Because if he was, it would color everything that he wrote way too much.
Exactly. And I think that's really important to be objective. You know, we blog. We don't report. We are bloggers. And I think there's that definition. It's like, I will never be a journalist. I never went to journalism school. I write about a team I like. But at that same time, doesn't mean I have to take their BS, hook, line, and sinker. It's like, we all love sausage, but you don't want to know what goes into it. The same thing goes with football. And it doesn't mean that you're less of a fan if you look at it with a jaded eye. I think you're looking at it with a realistic eye, and that it's kind of an informed decision. Yeah, I think Like when it comes to concussions, I think they're horrible. I think that the Packers, or the, not the Packers, the NFL's take on domestic violence is lip service at best. My brother, Jay, God bless you, you wrote that article last week about the hypocrisy of the NFL. If people haven't read it, I say go over to Chiefs.tv and read it, because he takes a really objective look at some of the BS that goes on in the sport we love very much. Does it mean we have to stop it? We have to boycott it? No, but we can be informed consumers.
Yes.
So there's
we can complain. They do listen to complaining. It has to be a large level of complaining, but they do listen.
Case in point last year was when Ray Rice got arrested and when Adrian Peterson got arrested or got charged with child abuse. What finally got things moving was corporate sponsorship.
Yep.
Nike,
I have
Ray Rice
for you. Lance Easley.
I
think us calling Roger Goodell and leaving lots of horrified messages actually did
I
make
may or may
out.
Not have been a contributor to that in disseminating that phone number.
I may or may not have called and said really bad words that
Jersey
Apple.
Jay, you wrote the article. What's your take on this?
Well, I don't want to summarize the entire article, but I'll just kind of add some points. The NFL, they do some hypocritical things. They do. But doesn't mean that we can't like the NFL. Everyone's like, well, if you don't like the NFL, boycott. Well, boycotting is not the answer, because if you don't turn on your TV and you don't buy a couple jerseys, that's not going to affect the NFL's bottom line. It's just not. So boycotting, not going to work. It would require everyone to boycott or half the fans boycott, and that's just not going to happen. So if you don't like what the NFL's doing as far as how they employ women beaters during primetime games and afternoon national games during the same time they're going to air the No More commercial, that's not right. That's hypocritical, and we shouldn't stand for that. So fans need to do something. They can act out. They can write. They can call. They can blog. They can call into radio shows. Just be heard. Just be heard. The NFL is hypocritical. But also, it's all about education. And I'm not talking about educating not only the NFL. Talking about educating the fan base. Because what is considered acceptable and unacceptable is still just misperceived. It's people don't know what it means to be wrong. Just read Twitter sometime. The other last couple nights, Twitter's blowing up over what it means to be bullied and not bullied. Oh, if that reporter wasn't bullied, yeah, he was bullied.
Let me interrupt for a second. I think it was Chris Christofko who had, I think it was him, it might have been Pete, who had a great point that if you don't know what it means to bully, you are a bully. Chances are
you've never been. Yep.
You're so reveling in your own stinks, you don't realize you are.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So that was bullying. And then another thing that I will never accept, and this is the most common excuse, and it's so wrong, it is so just ignorant and stupid to say this. Football's a violent game. So you can't expect these players to act professionally and not beat someone. That is total crap. That is total, total crap. If that's your excuse to allow someone to beat a woman because it's a violent game, you are a moron. You're an idiot, and you have no business having children of your own if you think that's okay.
You're a loser. You lose.
The NFL is a violent game, so we can't expect them to not be violent. Yes, you can. And then Twitter's like,
come on,
well,
I live in an army town. Come on. We have trained killers that live 20 minutes from my house, but nobody's shooting each other up.
Right.
Yes, exactly. 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 And
it's like,
and Twitter's,
I'm sorry,
like,
a guy with an M16 can hold it in check. I'm pretty sure a football player should be
able. Yes, and the same skyfall Twitter, the same people that like football's a violent game, and if you don't like it, don't watch. Get a new team. No, the bottom line is some of us want an NFL not populated by woman beaters and crap bags. We want professionals who are making premium dollars. We call them professional players because they make money. And whether you like it or not.
And they're professional. They leave it on the field.
They're professional. Whether you like it or not, they're going to be role models for children. But they're not a replacement for parents. Parents should do their job. But whether you like it or not, kids are going to look up to them.
Yep.
So
they need
to be professionals. So
case in point,
I got so mad at Twitter the other night. Yes, I got so mad at Twitter. It's a violent game. You don't like it, then don't watch it. We can watch it. We can enjoy it. We demand better. We enjoy them to be human beings, not sacks of crap who beat women and beat children and bully our bully reporters.
Jerry Kramer said it very well in Instant Replay. He, very professional man. They all dressed in suits and ties back then when they were traveling and they all had other jobs and stuff. But he said it very well. He said, I worked myself into a state of violence, I'm paraphrasing, all week. this is what I do, so that on Sunday I can go out on that field and I can do my job. That's what I do. But other than that, was he running around, like, hitting people? No. Did he like to party? Yeah, I think it kind of sounds like he did. But he wasn't off getting in bar fights and beating people up and being a moron off the field and hitting women and things like that. He did his job, and he enjoyed it. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Let me give you the example of one of the most gentle souls I've ever met. And, well, Jay, you know who I'm talking about, right? Your best friend when you were three. The guy was one of these 60-minute men, played the line on both sides. He played for the whole stinking game before there were helmets, and he was, you know, playing old-school smash-mouth football. Well, you know what? When I was a kid, I thought a Green Bay Packer was a gentle old man of few words that tinkered in the garden all day, because that was what he was like when football wasn't part of his life. He wasn't angry. He wasn't belligerent. I don't think I ever heard him raise his voice, and every little kid in the neighborhood loved him.
Yeah. And, you know, our dad tells a really awesome story about Iron Mike, and I use this advice to, you know, in my life. So Mike was out in his garden back by the fence. Dad walks outside all pissed off like he gets with me when he talks to our mother. And so
Mom
Mike,
just
so
does that to you, by the way.
Yeah. What's that?
His mom just does that to people.
Yeah. So this is how Mike was just so non-confrontational and would never yell or never raise a hand to a woman. So Dad was outside all pissed off, kind of just taking a break and getting some air. And then Mike came over and said, So, you had disagreement, huh? Yeah, you know, we disagreed. Yeah, I can tell you look a little worked up. So let me give you some advice when it comes to relationships. You can be right or you can be happy. You need to pick your battles. Just let it go. Let it go. Just let it go. Love your wife. Let it go. And that was great advice. That's how Mike was non-confrontational. He just didn't want to fight.
That's why he was a role model, too, you know. He had time for everybody in the neighborhood.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're like 15 minutes over. Do we have
we're way over time. I think we should probably wrap it up.
Is Annie here to roll credits by any chance? Otherwise, we got to talk forever till it automatically goes off. Hey, look! Music!
Lacey, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.